For the very generous introduction, and thank you for having me. So this is the name of the game today. This is work with my advisor and people from UC Davis. And this is where we stand as of this morning. You know, the early run, the past 1.5 years of the LHC have been really great for the standard model. You know, today at lunch, we're talking about how there are so many experimentalists rushing to the Higgs analysis and doing all these standard model things. Not so great for new physics, which is kind of what a lot of us got into the game for.
That's an
understatement. I'm trying to be diplomatic. This is being recorded, right? in fact, in particular, all the people in my generation, we were undergrads when the LHC was being completed, and we all felt that, you know, supersymmetry is right around the corner. And, you know, you click on HCP this morning, and you see BS to mu mu at the standard model rate. You see Higgs at the standard model. And, you know, you wonder, whatever happened to naturalness? Whatever happened to the hierarchy problem? Whatever happened to, you know, Susie being right around the corner? And the plots that we look at, these are really the kinds of plots that people were making before we started thinking in terms of simplified models. So here is a plot in, I guess, CMSSM space, are very sobering, right? You have the usual exclusion lines, and if you can see it, these are contours of squark masses of, you know, 1.5 TeV. This is 1 TeV.
Yeah, they're conveniently quite invisible.
Right. They hide the things that'll make you want to drink. Another way of taking a look at this, this is another mess of information. But the point is that the LHC is doing a great job. I mean, it's doing too good of a job of ruling out what appears to be our preferred Susie parameter space. So these are both from CMS. Atlas has similar plots. And the mood is very sobering. So the I guess the sentiment is this really all we have? Is low-scale supersymmetry dead? Are we really faced with sparticles at 1.5 TeV or higher? Whatever happened to naturalness? Now, this morning I had a great conversation with Leo about this paper by Shapozhnikov in 2009, which has, they had some UV asymptotically free gravity at the Planck scale, and they assumed no new physics down to the electroweak scale. And if you look at this paper by Shapozhnikov, it predicts the Higgs boson mass to be 126 GeV. And is this the situation that we're facing where there's no new physics? I mean, do we just have to live with what looks like fine tuning? The bastion of hope is that maybe things aren't so bad. Maybe the things that we're ruling out are a slice of parameter space that was convenient 10 years ago when we didn't have an LHC, but something which we need to be more mature about now. The things which you really are ruling out are colored particles, things with huge cross-sections of LHC. So what these very sobering plots are telling us is basically that, we don't have six degenerate squarks, six degenerate colored scalars, you know, at the electroweak scale or just above the electroweak scale. We don't have a gluino and large MET signatures, you know, or at least things that decay into large MET signatures in appreciable production. And so if you want to be an optimist, and I desperately want to be an optimist, then the statement is that if supersymmetry exists, then it has a really interesting spectrum. There's something non-trivial going on here, and there's some fun model-building games to play, and there's some interesting phenomenology to try to think through. So here is the relevant question in light of the early LHC data. Is low-scale natural Susie still alive? Can Susie still solve the hierarchy problem, subject to the experimental constraints that we're faced with? And the answer is yes. And this goes under the framework of natural Susie. It's been presented just this past year by several people, Michaela, Josh, and Andy, foremost among them. And the idea is that in our Susie spectrum, let us maintain the sparticles which preserve naturalness. Just keep the guys that we absolutely need to solve the hierarchy problem. And the rest of the guys, let them be heavy. Let them decouple. And so here is a toy picture of what a minimally natural Susie spectrum looks like. We start with the light stops, right? So in order that the the quadratic UV sensitivity of the Higgs mass be canceled with supersymmetry. We want to have light stops because the stops are the guys which cancel the top loops, which are have order one couplings. We also want to have light Higgsinos. So at tree level, you know, there's this the Higgs mass is related in a sum and quadrature to the mu parameter, and the mu parameter is precisely the term which is giving your Higgsino masses at tree level. So if you want the Higgs to be lightish, then you then these guys also end up being lightish.
Right.
Yes.
What do you mean by not too heavy greenish?
Yes. Good. So exactly. Yes. So this will address in the talk, and we're talking about so exactly not too heavy being well. 2 days ago, I would have said above 1 TeV. Today, I will say above 1.2 TeV.
We just keep going up.
That's right. So why do we have not too heavy gluinos? So the light stops were a one loop correction to the Higgs mass. The Higgsinos were coming from the tree level relation of the Higgs mass. The gluinos come in at two loop to the Higgs mass. So the gluinos contribute to the stop mass. These contribute one loop to the stop mass. And those contribute at one loop to the Higgs mass. So this is a two loop effect on the Higgs mass for naturalness.
The other issue is minimal exclusivity.
That's right. That's right. We'll get there shortly. But excellent point, yes. So okay, so we've got the stops, the Higgsinos, the gluino. This is a bit of an extra thing. If you want to hold on to unification, then the gluino mass gives you the ratios of the other eno masses, gaugeno masses, are fixed by the gluino masses. So these guys end up being not too heavy. So that's what I mean by light-ish. And the rest of the guys, first and second generation squarks, your sleptons, you know, most of your ugly scalars, are decoupled. These are the guys which can live at 1.5 TeV. These are the guys which are feeling the ugly constraints that we had at the beginning of the talk. All right, but exactly. So this is the fly in the ointment, right? So we have a 125 GeV particle, which most likely is the Higgs. If I were to bet, not my PhD, but my colleague's PhD, so I would say it's the Higgs. And the Higgs is a 125 GeV. And 125 is it's an interesting number. It's not too heavy. You know, it's still within the MSSM, but it's a lot heavier than you would expect from the MSSM. And so here's an obligatory formula. So here is the expression for the Higgs mass heuristically within the MSSM. And exactly, you have this tree level term, so at tree level, the Higgs mass has an upper limit of the Z mass. And this is really coming from your D-term quartic coupling, right? So the D-term contribution to the Higgs quartic is related to the squares of the gauge couplings, which is related to the Z mass. And so you have, at tree level, the Higgs mass being less than or equal to the Z mass. The Z mass is 90. So that's a problem. So OK, we go to one loop level, and we say that, you know, there's a contribution from the stop, which can push this up, and another contribution from stop mixing, which can do a bit more to push it up. But these things are really going back to a little hierarchy problem, right? This is another tuning. If you need to have your stops heavier again, then you're reintroducing this hierarchy problem. The off-the-shelf solution, and there are many ways to solve this. One very nice way is this next to minimal supersymmetric standard model. So here you extend the standard model with a singlet. The singlet does a couple of nice things. It gives you your mu parameter. But in terms of the tuning of the Higgs mass, it gives you an additional source for the quartic. So this lambda is a parameter of the extended sector. And now this thing can be fairly large, so up to perturbativity. And in fact, there are people who do these lambda SUSY models where a lambda is non-perturbative, and they can push this tree level bound even further at the cost of some UV completion. So the game that we're going to play is we're going to try to map down to an effective theory which looks something like the NMSSM, because this is the guy which seems to be really natural at low energies. Did that address the point?
There's lots of questions.
All right, so here is and I'm just throwing this up heuristically. This is from the Berkeley group. And this is a measure of tuning, fine-tuning, in the MSSM on the left compared to the NMSSM on the right. On the x-axis, we have this x sub t, which is a measure of the stop mixing. So in general, if you have more stop mixing, you can increase your Higgs mass. And on the y-axis, you have the stop mass. And these contours are measurements of the fine tuning in the Higgs mass, whose exact formula I have not put up, and it's not really important. But by some measure, you can see, and you probably can't see actually, so this dip over here is around the value of 200 in fine tuning. By comparison, over here in the NMSSM has a value of around 15, you know, here's 25. This is just a fancy way of saying what we said previously, that in the NMSSM, you can relax a lot of this apparent tuning by introducing additional matter into your theory. So the name of the game is light stops. This is the interesting thing to play with. And just to talk a little bit about the broad phenomenology of direct stop production, a nice classification by Matt Rees et al. Comes from the kinds of decays. The thing that you want to worry about is the background from stop decays coming from top decays. So if you push down your stop to be light, you know, the stop will be in the ballpark of the top mass. How can you tell the stop decays, once you produce them, from the top decays? Maybe the stops are hiding in the top background. And then I should say, isn't it great that we live in a time when you can talk about the tops being backgrounds? So there's this nice classification. You have three body decays coming from when the stop is light-ish. The light stop is light-ish, meaning that when it decays through an off-shell top quark. So the decay products are essentially three body. So these three things reconstruct the stop invariant mass. And these are actually fairly nice. So for these guys, you take the visible things, so the electron from the W and the B jet, and the invariant mass distributions are actually very different between the stop and the top. And this is something which was done, you know, 13 years ago. And this is something where there's really a pretty decent handle once you have enough data to look at these things. You can consider heavy-ish stops, and these are now two-body decays, when the stop goes to a top and a neutralino. So these are a bit more difficult. So now you're going through an on-shell top. And a lot of the recent progress with light stop phenomenology has been coming into direct stop production in this region and trying to make use of kinematic distributions to really separate the stop from the top background. I want to focus on a particularly perverse region, the one-body decay, which is the stealth stop. And this is a stop which is very close to the top mass with a neutralino which is very, very light. So for example, with a gravitino, which is essentially massless. And the thing about this limit is that now you're losing a lot of your missing ET. Right? This handle which you wanted to use here, that's gone. And this is a what is called a blind spot in the analysis, because these things really, really, really look like a die top production.
You don't really mean one body, you just mean
it's a poetic, yeah. Poetic license. So one body meaning the stop decays into a top, which has basically the same form momentum because the gravitino emits so little momenta. Okay, there are other more perverse things you can play with. Maybe the stop is slightly long-lived and it has a displaced vertex. Maybe you can form bound states. You can also get around the usual searches by having flavor violations. So the stop decays into a charm or through RPV. These we will not address in this talk.
But if the stop is boosted, then it's not quite
good. Yeah, this is okay. Yeah, this is true. But the let's see. Yes, but this I mean you still would not see the. I mean, yeah. So this is essentially massless, and you would see little of missing ET. I mean, the thing you're looking for is met, and you wouldn't have the met handle.
So you imagine that the stop mass and the top mass are like 10 GeV apart.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if the stop itself is boosted, let's say gamma of 5. I mean that's extreme, but that will give you a 50 GeV.
This is.
Yeah, no, the rate is more. I'm not saying that this
Right, okay.
For yes. Important DEV, this will be, this won't be small.
Yes, okay, so we'll, yeah, we'll get to the pheno in a bit. All right, so here is another one of the favorite plots. So this is probably only going to be valid for, I don't know, maybe another week or so, because HCP, the HCP slide said that they're working on a revision to this plot. This is from Atlas. These are the stop exclusions for direct stop production. This line here, going down to the top mass here, is the stealthy region. So this region between the yellow and this line, which is kind of hard to see, is the stealthy blind spot. The green blob we're going to ignore, this is from the stop to bottom decays through a Chargino. But this yellow blob is what we're dealing with. So we're going down to around, what, 230 for a massless LSP, massless neutralino or gravitino. No, this is 5 inverse femtobarn. So I checked this morning, they don't have a revision for the for whatever it is, 10 inverse femtobarn. Oh, is there?
They're beginning to carve into that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So this is the interesting thing to see how far you can push into the this blind spot. Great. And this is, I don't want to spend much time on this, but this is from Daniele. It's just to show a different direction for these light stop searches. This is playing with MET distributions, kinematic distributions, and this is the claim for what you can do by doing fancier analyses with more luminosity. So this is with 20 inverse femtobarn. Let's see. This big region over here, sorry, the lines aren't labeled, but this big region over here is the Fermilab group's claim for what they can do. Okie doke. So, okay, given this, an interesting thing to think about is what kind of UV models can generate these light stops? And they all kind of fall into a similar theme. They're all variations of strong coupling. And here are three ways of dealing with strong coupling. One is through warped extra dimensions, through ADS-CFT. Another is through nonlinear realizations, like through the CCWZ formalism, nonlinear sigma model. Another one's through quiver diagrams, which are you can think of as a deconstruction of the warped extra dimension. So this is where a lot of the model building progress has been happening. So let me take you through a quick tour of that. And this diagram really betrays my academic lineage and how I've been taught to think about physics. But suppose one way to think about strong coupling is through warped extra dimensions. And before I say anything about SUSY, one of the great things about warped extra dimensions is that it gives you this thing called anarchic flavor. So you know, here's the RS scenario where I have an IR brain, which is identified with compositeness in the CFT language, a UV brain, which is, corresponds to your elementary states. And you pull your standard model particles into the bulk. And OK, so these guys have KK states. These zero mode states are identified with your standard model particles. And your Higgs is mostly composite, meaning it's brain localized in the IR. It has order 1 couplings. So your Kawa couplings are order 1 and 5D. But through an order 1 parameter, your zero-mode fermions can either be leaning towards the UV brain or the IR brain. Particles which are leaning towards the UV brain are mostly elementary, and they have a small overlap with the Higgs. Particles leaning towards the IR brain are mostly composite and have a large overlap with the Higgs. In this way, you're able to generate fermion masses with this order 1 Yukawa coupling. So the top, the T left and the T right coupling to the Higgs is large because you have this large wave function overlap with the Higgs VEV. The up quark has a small coupling to the small mass because its coupling to the Higgs is very suppressed, exponentially so. Now, if you supersymmetrize this, you get some kind of handle for generating light stops, right? Because now you have a model of flavor. And the weird thing about light stops in model building is that you have to do something weird with flavor, right? The third generation is special. And here's one way of parameterizing how this third generation is special. You know, these guys are all at the elementary scale. These are things which have order 1 or some small differences. The differences between generations are manifested in anomalous dimensions. As you flow down, you end up with a third generation, which is mostly composite. And so the picture here People call it emergent SUSY or accidental SUSY because it's something which shows up at low energies, while the high energy fundamental theory is SUSY breaking. The picture here is that the fermion masses, this story for why the fermions are light, can be mapped onto how you get this particular Skork spectrum. If SUSY breaking is on this brain, is in the elementary theory, then your first two generations are very sensitive to it and get large masses, while this brain, the composite state, is mostly supersymmetric. So your heavy fermions have spermions, have stops, which do not feel SUSY breaking very large, and have masses which are close to their fermionic partners. Yes? That's right. That's right. So, but these are things. So, within, if you want to take the RS scenario, so, maybe I should preface by saying this is a nice poetic way of thinking about strong coupling. If you want to take the RS scenario very seriously, then there are parameters you can play with to decouple the KK modes. But the story that I want to convey here is that this is a language with which you can start thinking about what models of strong coupling look like. So it's a framework for producing these light stop theories. So, okay. Another thing you can do, which was done independently, but you can think of as being very much the same picture, is to deconstruct the extra dimension. So here is a quiver diagram, or I guess people here would call it a moose diagram, which is basically a two-site representation of this picture. Here's your UV brain, here's your IR brain. You have a copy of the standard model on this node, a copy of the standard model here. This copy talks to light fermions. This copy talks to the third generation. And supersymmetry talks to these guys, and only to this guy through two link fields. And it's the phenomenologically, it's really the same story. But when you draw it this way, one of the explicit things which you see right away is that in a 4D model, well, in this model, it'll be hard to get conventional unification. I mean, there are words you can use, like orbifold unification, or I think Neil's paper was unification without unification. But this is, again, kind of showing what we have to do to our models to get light stops. And it's really doing something fairly violent and separating the Higgs and the third generation and sequestering it, in a way, from the first two generations. And you can also say words like agenomediation with this picture. OK, so here's another cartoon. So another way of thinking about strong coupling is through an effective theory, the nonlinear sigma model. So these are basically Goldstone modes. And these have been played with for these composite Higgs models. And so, for composite Higgs, you have some strong sectors, some technicolor-like sector. The Higgs is a pseudo-Goldstone boson. And these people, a couple of years ago, played with trying to make a supersymmetric version of this by just supersymmetrizing this picture. Again, in flavor and in spirit, similar to the previous two pictures, it's a little bit different because you have this derivative coupling associated with the shift symmetry. But again, your Yukawa couplings come from mixing with the elementary states. So that mixing is really the fact, it's the same thing as pulling a wave function into the bulk, if you want to use this language, or really the link fields getting VEVs in this language. What is worth noting is that this is actually more like a SUSY model than it is like a composite Higgs model, because once you impose supersymmetry, once again, you get these D-term contributions to the quartic in the Higgs potential. And now your Higgs potential looks a lot more like a supersymmetry theory than a minimal composite Higgs theory. But that's all I really want to say about this. So this is just giving a brief overview of different UV models which give light stops. And now I want to talk about another avenue. So here we talked about different ways to access strong coupling. Right? Strong coupling is hard to calculate. We need some handles to be able to control it. And an additional handle is through Seiberg duality. So Seiberg duality is a IR duality in supersymmetric gauge theories. The idea is within the conformal window, if we have a super QCD theory in the non-abelian electric phase, you have Coulomb phase, you have F flavors and capital N colors, so SU capital N with an SU capital F cross SU capital F flavor symmetry, like copy of QCD. Now, the claim that this is dual to a magnetic theory with the same global symmetries, the same flavor symmetries, but a different gauge group, capital F minus N gauge group, SU capital F minus N. This is just meant to be a cartoon to show that this is really a supersymmetric generalization of the Banach-Zaks fixed point. And the thing about the magnetic theory is that the magnetic theory is a theory of dual quarks under this gauge group and a meson, which is an adjoint plus one of the flavor group. And this, with these dual quarks in the meson, you can form a Yukawa interaction. And one of the motivations when Seiberg was playing with Seiberg duality was that, hey, the standard model has Yukawa interactions and, you know, a gauge group. Maybe there's a way to embed the standard model in the magnetic theory. So the story here is really that, you know, these two theories, the electric magnetic theories, flow to the same conformal fixed point. And the step to take is that you interpret the magnetic theory, you know, one is IR-free, the other is UV-free. You interpret the magnetic theory as the low energy effective theory with the low energy effective degrees of freedom of the electric theory as it passes near the conformal fixed point. So the question then, so this, and this is now not even thinking about stops, but this is from a, you know, a question people have been asking for many years. Can you have a theory where the W and the Z bosons, the heavy gauge bosons of the electron weak sector, can these be identified with as composite states? You know, for example, we know in QCD there's a spin one rho meson, which is a massive spin one field. Can you identify the W and Z as something like the rho meson? So many years ago, Abbott and Farahi played with this in Technicolor, and the reason, and they found they had difficulty, and the reason they had difficulty was because there's no way to explain the size of the electroweak couplings, and this is actually a very a big issue, as we'll see. So Seiberg duality was a big step in this direction, and the hope really was that you can do exactly this thing. But it wasn't until fairly recently when Zohar Komorgotsky really interpreted Seiberg duality in a slightly different way that the direction became clear. So Zohar pointed out that within the nonlinear sigma model, in the 90s, people were playing with, I guess they called it hidden local symmetries. So, you know, a gauge symmetry is a redundancy of the Lagrangian. You know, it's not a real symmetry. But Bando, Kugo et al. In the early 90s found that, you know, in the nonlinear sigma model, you can write in a redundancy, a gauge redundancy in your theory. It shows up naturally in the fields that you use. And that redundancy lends itself to an interpretation of the spin one resonances as gauge bosons of that gauge redundancy, which you just put in by hand. So this isn't really an interpretation of the rho meson as some kind of gauge field, right? And this is now weird because the gauge field, the redundancy is something that we just identified. It's a mathematical trick, if you want. And this is actually a very non-trivial thing. There are several checks, but he pointed out that the magnetic gauge group, the N minus F gauge group, F minus N gauge group that appears in the magnetic theory, can really be identified as this hidden local symmetry that Bando and Kugel found in the 90s, the supersymmetric version thereof, and that these rho mesons, that the gauge bosons of the magnetic gauge group could really be thought of as rho mesons, as the spin one resonances of the bound states from the electric theory. That's right. Good. So, well, let me say something more general. So you have an SQCD theory, electric theory, UV theory, with some quarks, some electric quarks. And I claim that there's a magnetic theory with dual quarks under this gauge group. And this gauge group has a gauge boson, this rho meson. What is that thing made of? It's made up of bound states of these quarks, of the electric quarks, forming a spin one resonance. So in the QCD analogy would be, you know, up quarks and down quarks form spin one objects called rho mesons. I can identify that with some kind of gauge boson under this. It's this gauge group. It's the SUN gauge group. You're saying what's setting the scale? So what's binding them are the gluons of this theory.
So it's just QCD.
That's right. That's an excellent question.
But not QCD.
That's right. Good. Oh, it's going to get worse before it gets better. So here, sometimes you listen to what your advisor says and sometimes you don't. And one of the things my advisor told me is that whenever you show a table like this, people will stop listening to you. And he's probably right. But how to look at this table. Above the dashed line is the electric theory. Below the dashed line is the magnetic theory. Okay, the electric theory has two quarks, a quark and an antiquark. The magnetic theory has a quark and an antiquark and a meson. The electric theory has an SU8 flavor symmetry, SU8 cross SU8. The flavor symmetry translates down to the magnetic theory. I've chosen SU6 for the gauge group because 8 minus 6 is 2, and I want to get SU2 left as my magnetic gauge group. So my magnetic gauge group is SU2, which identifies as the weak SU2, and I have fundamental under the gauge group, fundamental under the flavor, anti-fundamental under the gauge group, fundamental under the other flavor. And the meson just transforms as, maybe one of those bars shouldn't be there, as an 8 cross 8. Okay? You get a magnetic Yukawa coupling, and the sanity check is this Yukawa coupling, however I embed my standard model into this construction, better include the Yukawa coupling to the standard model. Okay? So I've got my electroweak gauge group. Where's everything else? So color. I embed color by weakly gauging the diagonal subgroup of all of these ridiculous SU3s. Here you have some custodial-like symmetry, and SU3G is the lepton flavor symmetry. So, yes?
Wouldn't you have very small constraints from W prime and Z prime searching?
W prime and Z prime searching. Which W prime?
Because you'll have a higher resonance with the same quantum number than W and Z.
Yes, but which? Yeah, so this will be an issue in the next model. Yes. But here, here you just say, you have the dual gauge bosons of this guy, and that's your W and Z. This is really your SU2 left. So the magnetic theory doesn't have any extra gauge bosons. Okay, so, and this is still in the it gets uglier before it gets better phase. I embed my standard model spectrum in a very non-trivial way, right? So here are the three quark left-handed doublets. I have my leptons here, and this guy has the SU3 lepton generation symmetry. So these are all of your lepton doublets. But you know that the quarks are split between the two magnetic quarks. Our standard model quarks are split between the two magnetic quarks. We have our two Higgses, and there's an extra pair of Higgses here. And the extra pair is necessary to get the correct Yukawa couplings. Here is our meson. Okay, what to see in this meson? Well, what you see is that you have your singlets, your quark singlets here, and your lepton singlets here. You have an S, which it's not important for this model, but we identified with the singlet of the NMSSM. And you have a lot of junk. These are some kind of leptoquarks. This is some kind of color vector, and this is a color sextet. And these are just guys that we don't want. And in fact, if you're really clever, you'll look at this and say, you know what? You probably also have anomalies. And you do. So what you do is you take all the guys you don't want, and you decouple them. These are all things. These are magnetic guys, which I can introduce elementary fields for, conjugate elementary fields with the same quantum numbers. So now I'm playing with fields across the duality. And by introducing the conjugate states, I give them vector-like representations, which means they don't contribute to the anomaly. And also, it allows me to write down mass terms, which will decouple them and put them at the electric scale, the high scale. And by doing this, it's not a miracle. By doing this, you automatically cancel the anomalies because you've reduced your matter content to the MSSM matter content, which is anomaly-free by construction. Hypercharge can be fit into one of the anomaly-free gauge symmetry, the flavor symmetries, which you can weakly gauge. And what's actually kind of cute, you automatically get accidental R parity, which is a nice feature. One big problem. Yes? Sorry? Sorry, I couldn't hear you.
You still didn't talk about vacuum configurations.
Of which?
Oh,
you mean in terms of electric symmetry breaking?
Yeah.
There's a more pressing problem, even before we break electric symmetry.
Also, when you have these spectator fields, you can model the vacuum.
Yes. But let me say this. There's a more pressing problem, which makes me want to dump this model immediately. It's the size of the electroweak gauge coupling. So if I told you that nucleons are bound states of quarks, and I wanted to identify this I wanted to ask, how do these nucleons couple to one another? There's some residual strong coupling between the nucleons, right? Of the order, it knows about the strong coupling which bound the quarks into nucleons. And that residual coupling is actually much stronger than the electroweak coupling. This is why the Abbot-Fari model failed in 81. And again, this is betraying my academic lineage. One way to think about this is the difference between RS and realistic RS. So RS1 in 1998 had everything on the brain. Everything was composite. But how is it that you had a composite W boson coupling to fermions with this really weak coupling? When the fermion was composite and the W boson's composite, don't these whatever prions make up these guys, wouldn't those guys know that these are strongly coupled? If you play with the properties of the couplings, if you jack up the number of flavors, you can avoid this. But that's, now you're really adding lots of matter content. F needs to be huge. And that's not nice. So this model where you have a fully composite electroweak gauge group is unsettling. Because it just does not make sense. I mean, and there are formal ways to write this, but the point is it does not make sense for these composite guys to not know about this, not have a residual interaction that's very strong between each other. But the RS picture gives us some motivation to get around this, and that's through partial compositeness. So remember, the whole point of this, the CFT interpretation of this picture, was that as you pull a field into the bulk, you're mixing a fundamental, an elementary state with a composite state. And by doing that, you have some control over the coupling. And this is now, and a fair thing to say is this is a very big band-aid that you're putting onto the model. And it's exactly right. You're losing a lot. And so what we're saying is it seems to be very, very difficult, maybe impossible, to write down a model of fully composite electroweak symmetry, electroweak gauge symmetry. What you can do is you can mix your composite gauge group with an elementary gauge group. So I smack on an additional gauge group in the UV, and I break it to what I identify with the standard model. And by doing this, I can tune my coupling to be weak. So historically, this was done by Nate, Daniel, and Jesse. And they were planning on maybe I shouldn't say this when I'm on tape, but they were planning on publishing at the same time as the Cornell-Irvine-Davis group. But the Cornell-Irvine-Davis group were still trying to figure out this strong coupling. And the other group went straight to the partial composite model.
Recent LHC results, to see how point-like everything is.
Mm-hmm.
So high energy. So they're excluding prions and stuff up to something more than TUV.
What's
this?
Yeah.
You check to see the composites.
So in these light quarks are exactly the guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the light quarks are exactly the guys which you want to be more fundamental. So okay. So in order to make a nice model, the trade-off of this gigantic band-aid is I'm going to try to minimize the matter content, which means the only things we want to composite are the Higgs and the third generation quarks of quarks. And they gave this a really stupid name. So I can't even pronounce McSusie. I call it McSusie, the minimal composite supersymmetric standard model. So I showed this to John Turning to make fun of him. And he said that I should get used to this sign when I don't get a job. So, and here's, again, here's the other, another plot which you guys are not going to like. So again, ignore the U1s. Now what are we doing? Flavor, 6. F equals 6. And we still want an SU2 magnetic, so we have 4 in the SU4 for the gauge group in the electric theory. So this part is exactly the same. This part you don't have to worry about. But the point is, once again, you have dual quarks and a dual meson. And the only things we want to fit into these guys are the third generation and the Higgs. The other guys in the standard model, or in the MSSM, let them be elementary states. So this is how we try to squeeze everything in.
What do you do about the SU2? Those are treated as, they're also composite.
That's right. So right now, this is the composite. This is an SU2. This is just like the previous one.
It's above the Higgs and the WZ.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. So we're still, but then we're going to mix this one with an SU2 elementary. So the W and Z become partially composite.
So you will have W prime and Z prime.
Now we have the W prime and Z prime. So we have to throw in an additional Higgs, pair of Higgses, because these are the guys which are breaking your SU2 magnetic cross SU2 band-aid into SU2 standard model. So there's an additional pair of Higgses. Here's your third generation Skork and the usual Higgses. And you get an additional band-aid SU3 global symmetry.
So what is your meson? What is that?
Good. This is my meson. So it's a smaller matrix, so that's something. But it also has a larger proportion of junk. But now the junk is much more non-trivial. So the game last time was we see junk, we decouple it, and anomalies cancel because we end up with a standard model matter content. Now it's not so simple. So OK, I've highlighted the Yukawa coupling that we want, the top Yukawa coupling. So that's good. We got what we wanted there. The S here will be our NMSSM singlet. So that's floating around. Keep an eye on it. And all of these guys are junk. So we decouple them. We put in elementary states to decouple a bunch of these. The same thing as before. They go away. They take away some anomalies. We're happy. But now, because we're mixing, because the SU2 is non-trivial, and that we've torn apart the matter content, we're still left with an SU2 squared cross U1y anomaly. And part of these fields, the E and the X, actually serve a purpose of, well, they transfer the anomaly from the magnetic to the elementary sector, by which I mean they cancel the anomaly in the magnetic sector, but their quantum numbers are such that they reintroduce the anomaly in the electric, in the elementary sector, sorry, the elementary sector. But that's OK, because once it's in this sector, I can throw in more matter fields in the elementary sector to cancel those anomalies. So this is the thing which OK, some of the authors feel like is something of a miracle. It's non-trivial. But the point is, you're able to, there was something which was non-trivial in terms of the anomaly structure, and you're able to wiggle away and get out of it. One thing which you do lose is the accidental R parity from the previous model. And that's something where there's probably room for doing honest model building. OK, so here again, heuristically, what your superpotential looks like. So if you expand that, the matrix multiplication in the previous slide, you get some term here, which is your breaking of the elementary cross magnetic SU2 cross band-aid SU2 to SU2 left. And you have to put in a tadpole in the UV. So here is the tuning in the model, full disclosure. You have to put in some tuning here to get a tadpole to get this breaking. The same thing with the NMSSM. So you get your singlet will give you an NMSSM-like potential. It's not the real NMSSM, because you don't have the S-cubed terms. And you have to, again, put in a tadpole to have electric symmetry breaking. So this is something we're putting in by hand. So full disclosure, there's some tuning. And the idea is that these two tunings are things which you can handle from a model-building point of view in the electric theory. Get your Yukawa, and then this is the term which I was saying earlier, is saving you from that SU2 squared cross U1y anomaly. And indeed, so here are Itai's KKW and KKZ from this breaking. And you do have, and when you tune this to be large, that's the decoupling of those guys. Okay, so let me briefly talk about constructing a full model, a full ER model, where you have to include Suzy breaking. This was done in this paper. And let me just say heuristically what's going on. You know, it's a bit of a mystery. So you have this duality which holds in the supersymmetric case. Great, you know, I can write down this one Suzy theory to another Suzy theory. But we know Suzy is broken. And I want to be able to control how Suzy, I want to understand how Suzy is broken. So I want to be able to take my elementary, my fundamental theory, and mediate Suzy breaking somehow, and understand what that means for my magnetic theory, for my effective theory, which looks like the NMSSM. And it's non-trivial. I mean, you could ask yourself, well, does duality still hold? How do I parameterize the Suzy breaking terms? And it turns out there's a very nice way of doing this by doing an analytic continuation to superspace, meaning you take your soft breaking terms in the UV, you write them down as baryons, which you promote to superfields, right? The F terms and D terms of these superfields are your Suzy breaking terms. And what you observe is that these, once you write down the baryons, these things have a kind of U1 axial symmetry. It's like it's a background gauge field symmetry. And the combination of this symmetry and RG invariance gives you a way to parametrically control what the sizes are of the soft breaking terms in the magnetic theory. So it's a bit miraculous, and you can get this in parametrically in terms of you know, parametrically controlled.
How do you know that this new theory with spherons not being field really has a magnetic phase?
In the sense where you can take the, as you take the soft parameters in the electric theory to zero, I mean, it maps onto something, I mean,
yeah,
in the limit of small Suzy breaking.
Transition.
Yeah, okay. This. So if you want, this is a bit of nonsense.
But anyway, these Spurian approaches only matter for a week.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter, right? I mean, as long as it's not zero, there could be some phase transition at zero that gives it a magnetic phase.
Oh, I see.
But you may never be a magnetic phase away from zero.
Okay. I see. Although, okay, good. So what I'll say about that is that, I mean, you control the size of the couplings in the UV. And I understand you're saying that this could push you to a different behavior.
So
these are the papers which did the formalism.
No, but not formalism, it's just some different information.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with the magnetic effect.
So this I don't think so. The punchline for.
So in Chappell's paper, what they've done is just they use the analytic formulation, analytic continuation to figure out how the parameters in the magnetic theory scale with.
Exactly. Exactly.
But there's no proof that there's actually a magnetic theory.
Not that I know of. Yes. So I mean, here's junk. The green things are your Suzy breaking spurions. I just want to write this down to show heuristically to see what it would look like. But the punchline is that you end up with relations like these, where on the left-hand side, you have the soft breaking masses in the magnetic theory written as functions of the parameters related to the soft breaking masses of the elementary theory. OK. So here's the punchline for this class of models. When you turn the crank and you do all of this, if you pick the elementary scale, soft breaking scale to be around TV, you know, this sets your Gluino mass. So the Gluino is an elementary state. Your composite scale ends up being on the order of hundreds of GeV. Right? So this is where you're getting your light stop sector. And your right here are your light electroweak enos. Here's an A term. You're able to get this with modest, you know, not large 10 beta. And the phenomenology is you end up with, you can very easily get large mixing and a light stop. So let me just do a couple of these just to show what you can do with the model. And now this is something which is almost, at least in principle, is a pipeline where you take parameters, you put it through a Monte Carlo pipeline, and you get spectra and phenomenology. Here is a stealth stop region where you have the stop nearly degenerate with the top, you know, 188 GeV, and you have the stop going to a gravitino as your main decay. The thing from here to here is so your neutralino, your N1 is right around here. If you push this up, you also bring along a lot of the other sparticles. So by making the neutralino a little bit heavier, you can drag up the other sparticles and further decouple them. You know, your stop is still fairly light, and so you still have a modest missing ET, which you can play with for avoiding bounds. Okay. Okay, let me not say much about these two spectra, but the point here is you can also play with the parameters in such a way where you get very standard model-like, or sorry, MSSM-like signatures, you know, missing ET, you know, where your stop is now not becoming less and less, sorry, it's your neutralino going to stop, which is giving you MET, but with reduced rates, and usually because your squarks and gluino are becoming heavier. So you're playing with traditional signatures, but reduced rates to avoid the bounds. Okay, so here's kind of the philosophical point that is kind of the launching pad for what we want to continue doing. You know, there are many directions for direct stop production. Right? This is a lot of people are working on this and they're doing really great work. The thing that we want to explore is what can you do when you're armed with a UV model? Right? A lot of these other deconstruction, extra dimensions, nonlinear sigma model, these are all effective theories. The hope is that we can use these Mixuzi spectra as benchmark points to understand the properties of actual full UV realizations of light stops. And the hope is that maybe these can give you a handle. If you can identify general features from a model building point of view, this can give a handle for further experimental searches. So the quick and easy thing that we're doing right now, finishing up, is a multi-lepton search from SBOTM production. So I think this SBOTM production is actually still overlaps with these simplified model searches. But the hope is that as you creep up the spectra of a full UV model, you can start to see what generic features you get. Here's the background, and this is a plot which was just updated this morning, and this is the old plot. But the search that we're looking at is four leptons, for example, three or four leptons. Here's a four lepton background. And the way CMS was binning their data is to look at hadronic activity, which is HT, and missing energy, which is MET. ZV is a Z-veto. So our signal has all of our leptons coming from Ws. So we want to veto on any opposite sign, same family pairs, which give you Z. And it turns out that we populate this region over here, which is not well populated by the standard model. And let me just give you the punchline, since in interest of time. I'm actually very excited about HCP because of this. These backgrounds tend to be fairly non-trivial, right? A lot of these leptons are not actual leptons. They're reducible backgrounds. These are, you know, fake leptons from heavy flavor or photon internal conversions. And it's really hard to reproduce on Monte Carlo. What's really nice is that we can rescale these just from the cross-section data, because most of these backgrounds are all things which you produce mostly on shell. To go from 7 TeV to 14 TeV, really the main difference is that your parton distribution functions is larger at the on-shell production. The thing you worry about is pileup. Right? You have more pileup events at 14 TeV. But my understanding is that the 8 TeV run is actually running at almost design instantaneous luminosity. So the pileup that we have from the data at HCP now should be reflected in the data-driven backgrounds. So just as a benchmark point to see what we can do with this, at 7, 8 TeV, there's essentially no signal, no background. At 14 TeV with 20 inverse femtobarns, you know, now you're starting to see some separation between the something like 8 signal events in this preferred bin and, you know, a Poisson background around 0. So the punchline is that there are really two interesting directions here that I'm really excited about. You know, getting light stops within natural SUSY from a model building point of view and really constructing full UV theories is non-trivial. It's actually very interesting. There are a lot of things left to be done to create these benchmark models. You know, so what we have.
I mean, this is a question of how much tuning you're willing to accept.
That's right.
That's right.
So if you
clear that you have less
power. If you want to say it in a different way, the tuning has been pushed into a different manifestation where there are even some off-the-shelf solutions, you know, Giudice Masiero to take care of some of the tadpoles. And so there's some leeway in how to make a pretty model that does this. And the usual things that we like about SUSY are also up in the air. I mean, unification is a big thing which we lose in the conventional sense. If you, if you really want to have a full model with light third generations. Dark matter is something which wasn't really fully looked into. Flavor is something which is mainly constraining the first two generations, but again, you're doing gross violence to the flavor structure of the theory. And on the phenomenological side, like I said before, the program is really to try to use these UV models to inspire different handles for looking for light stops, in particular in this blind spot stealth region. So that's all I had. Thank you very much. Yes?
One of the major reasons for having a Higgs boson is the double Higgs simple neutron. The particles we know to be normalized among the units. However, for 3 decades or more, we tried to solve the problem of mass hierarchy by endless constructions. So, the reason to do all this is to solve the mass hierarchy.
You're talking about the fermion masses. The fermion masses or the Higgs natural mass? Yeah, that's right. So that's right.
So what comes away with the conclusion is being a presumably logical person, that it would be best not to have the Higgs particle in the first place because of all this complication. However, the data seems to show there is a Higgs-like particle. So this is an interesting situation.
He doesn't have PhDs. He's not like a philosopher.
Yeah, I'm afraid of what I would say.
He doesn't have a PhD yet. He's not allowed to philosophize.
Oh, am I a philosopher? I thought I was just talking about.
No, I didn't say you are. I said he's not allowed.
He's not.
I'm accountable for what I say into the speaker.
I'm not holding you responsible.
Any other questions?
So there's some B prime searches for like B prime going to W top, which would give you a similar topology. And I seem to remember that they have bounds that are like 600 GeV. Obviously,
yeah,
these cross sections are going to be different because they're from.
Yeah, the yeah. So there. Yeah, I looked at the B prime searches, and there was an assumption about the spectrum or something there where the bounds on these guys are actually very different.
Okay.
But yeah.
Well, speaking of the Higgs, the predictions you have from your theory, is that.
Yeah, so that was part of the tuning, was getting the 125 Jev Higgs.
Well, okay, that part is fine, but what about the branching ratios? Because you have
Yeah, that's right. So there's the short answer is there's nothing interesting to say about Higgs to gamma-gamma in these spectra. And that's something which, I know Matt Buckley and Strumia had papers about the role of a light stop in enhancing Higgs to gamma-gamma. But at least for these guys, at least the number, let me say completely honestly, the number that NMSSM tools was giving us was not hugely increased.
I just what about unitarity? Because this is one of the main reasons for loving the Higgs model.
That's right. I mean, so the Higgs is there, so WW scattering is unitary.
So there's no violation of unitarity between 1 to TeV?
No.
It's a strong coupled theory.
It's a strongly coupled theory with a UV completion. So if you want to say it this way, the electric theory is your fundamental theory, which is perfectly well behaved. It's a variant of it's a variant of QCD, supersymmetric
so
QCD.
Itself,
so that yeah, so that was the point of the I mean there are different handles to deal with a strong coupling regime, and Seiberg duality is one of these handles that we're using to not have to say anything about the ugly part. We have a weakly coupled theory in the UV and a weakly coupled theory in the IR.
Okay, well, that's it for sure again.
Thank you.